fundamentally our life lacks nothing. Except that we misapprehend and construe our life and do what's out of line with our life to create all sorts of difficulties out of line with the nature of this that we are. In the Buddhist tradition, from the earliest we can see, there's the point that the historical Buddha makes and is further clarified regarding what we call the three marks of, we could say, of existence, three marks of our life, three, if we want to call it, characteristics or aspects, facets. One way to speak of them is in the traditional terms of anicca, anattam, dukkha, or impermanence, meaning ongoing change. Non-self, non-self meaning there is no self inherent, separate, independent nature of us, each of us, of ourself, of person, or of any other entity, physical, of any other being, or even any other entity in other ways that we want to speak of them. And the third is dukkha, that means that inherently, conditions and circumstances, or if we say it another way, things in all different realms are inherently unable to satisfy clinging, attaching, holding to them, unable to fulfill and cover over any fears that arise from misapprehending life. They're inherently unable to satisfy because they're constantly changing, because they're subject to this ongoing change, which is another name for our true nature called Buddha nature. Ongoing change or ongoing impermanence, arising, passing, because in the midst of arising, passing, we seek permanence, we seek things that are mine and not mine, and things that are mine that will therefore ensure that I'll use the word protected from what? Protected from my fears, protected from loss, death. This protected, I think, is a very important aspect of our habits of reaction and attachment, or if I say it a different way, this self-centeredness that causes so much difficulties for us and for others, or that we cause so much difficulties for us and others, cause so much difficulties that we can call delusions, misapprehensions, or habits of body-mind reactions. So I want to talk a little bit about this perspective of protected and unprotected, and how that can help us see where and how we can live fully who we are, or, if I'll say it another way, sabotage quite thoroughly all the functionings of this wonderful life that we are, this wonderful opportunity of this moment, sabotage them when we believe fears, when we believe stories, when we believe attachments in the face of what's so. This very moment, nothing lacking in your life. This very moment is a perfect expression of this cause and effect that we are. Cause and effect is, if you want to say, the whole universe coming together right now in many realms, some that we can perceive, many we can't, some that we can think about, and many we can't, coming together right now as this moment. You're breathing in, breathing out, hearing, feeling, being nothing but the whole earth and the great universe manifested in your body, your mind. Of course, I just say your and all the rest as provisionally way to speak about it. There isn't anything else, and yet we'll talk about it as your body, your mind. See, so in a way, our attempts to protect what we think our life is causes us all sorts of difficulties. Our fears that if A, B, C, then we will be unprotected causes us all sorts of difficulties in the face of the impermanence, non-self, that manifests with other people doing, saying things that we like or don't like, with this body-mind condition being in ways that we want and in ways that we don't want. When we speak in the Harsh Sutra of no fear, therefore the Bodhisattva lives Prajnaparamita, therefore we can manifest this Anuttara Samyak Sambodhi, this complete, perfect, awakened life that we are. This is the no fear that need not protect in the midst of ongoing change that is Buddha nature, that need not dualize in the midst of this non-self life. This non-self life means it's not so-called yours somewhere in here, but it's the nature of this universe moment right now is non-self life. And yet, if because we want to grab on to certain things, whether it's ideas, identifications, or objects, or conditions, or, and you fill in the ors, those reactions, those self-centeredness, which is the, if I say it, the fundamental reaction to impermanence that creates difficulties for us. Then we have all sorts of ancillary problems that seem to arise one after another when the universe manifests, or I should say it differently, when our life manifests in the way that it does. In front of our face, we're nothing but seeing our face and hearing our voice in many forms, in many realms. And yet, I don't like that. I don't want that. How dare them say that to me? We become upset, hurt, offended. This attempt to protect ourselves causes us to do all sorts of difficulties. Even as we're trying to ensure our safety, we're creating many difficulties because of this delusion, these delusions. And yet, when we're unprotected, we still believe the need for protection, therefore, because we believe the need for it to be permanent, for it to be self, for it to be satisfied. Therefore, fear arises. Therefore, fear runs us. Of course, we can see this in other ways too. We could see it in the way societies organize. Those, if I say it with power or with wealth, resources, set it up so that they can protect themselves in all sorts of ways and subject others to unprotected circumstances or to the rules that apply to others but not to them, so that they can get what they want. And therefore they think, they believe that their self-centeredness will guarantee self in the midst of non-self, guarantee permanence in the midst of impermanence, guaranteed satisfaction and happiness in the midst of the inability of circumstances and condition to satisfy self-desires. And of course, those who are unprotected suffer because they believe the stories of the protected. So there's much here that I want to clarify further, because the point of speaking like this is for us to begin to see how and where our wonderful joyous universe that we breathe in and breathe out, that we have the opportunity in this life to be blissful, joyous, how this gets distorted and corrupted when we believe that what is impermanent is permanent. Though truly It is permanent, but it's permanently ongoing change. Though it's truly self, but it's not the self of self-centeredness. It's the self of true nature that we are. It's truly nirvana in the midst of this ongoing changing conditions that are not subject to the desires of being satisfactory in one particular way of self and other. So I'm going to stop now, because the reason I talk this way is only so that it supports us in our life practice, not because you need any kinds of talk, much less my talk, not that you need any kinds of theories. There are all kinds of theories, but we don't need them. See, just resolutely sitting, we are this life that we are. We manifest this universe that awakens as our life, moment, moment, just sitting. Nowhere else is this wonderful, wonderful life. That's why when the Buddha's awakened, he says, how wonderful, wonderful. All beings are the wisdom perfection of the Tathagata. All beings. They're nothing but this manifesting, if I say ongoing change, Buddha nature, this prajna wisdom and compassion. Except when we caught up in delusions and resulting attachments, which is what I've been speaking of. So I'll stop now and see whether there's somewhere, somehow we can clarify this. If you wish, you can change your positions. You can turn towards me. And those in the back, if you want to move into the center, feel free to do that. So if you, when you have a sense that you're protecting something, or when you have a sense that you feel unprotected to the winds and of ongoing change, right there is an opportunity and a reminder to be who you are, or to see what it is you're doing that's blinding. Yes, Munshin.
You're not suggesting that we don't protect ourselves. Right? Because that's why humans are here. We have a capacity to protect ourselves. And I'm not saying that's what you're talking about, but we do notice the house is on fire, yeah, and we respond appropriately.
Yeah.
Protecting our life, protecting the lives of those that are in the house.
But if you run out 3 days a week yelling the house is on fire when the house isn't on fire,
yeah,
and you start screaming at your neighbor about setting your house on fire, mm-hmm, and you start fighting with your spouse about what is she doing, it's going to make the fire worse, then we have difficulties.
So that's what we're talking about.
Yes. See, if you live in a house that can't be ever set on fire, and yet you keep insisting that it is on fire, that's even more so. See? The Heart Sutra is talking literally when it says, not born, not destroyed. And yet we are all sure we're born and destroyed, and we will be destroyed if. And you can figure out how many times a week you believe that you'll be destroyed if someone says, does, etc., etc., or if such and such happens in the universe, much less in your immediate vicinity. And what happens from that? See, what? That's what we're talking about. That's what I'm talking about. That's what the Buddha's talking about, how when he speaks of the Marx's characteristics of existence, he's talking about how the misapprehensions that result in us suffering. That's the point, is where we cause suffering. You know? And then we look for life insurance, fire insurance, when we don't need it, and we add on more of a kind that can't insure anything. So I'm going to get fire insurance by doing these things, accumulating these goods, da-da-da-da, making sure I don't speak to those people, and I do have those people, other people always around me, etc., etc. See, that's what we're talking about. Well, that's what I'm talking about, and that's what practice is talking about. When we are sitting and all of a sudden certain thoughts, feelings arise, or even memories, and we get up and run away from them because we can't tolerate them, because we will be unprotected, if I use that word, if they arise and continue, then right there, that's what's happening. But this is more abstract and conceptual in a way, because what's important is to see in our own life how and where this is happening.
So, do we have liability insurance here at the Zen Center?
Yes. And that's a requirement to have a mortgage. Can't have a mortgage in this state without insurance. It's a requirement, so we do it. However,
you wouldn't know. No guarantee. You wouldn't otherwise, unless you had to.
I don't know. No, I don't. You want to do, but know what it is you're insuring and what you're not insuring.
Mm-hmm.
See, that's the difference: is to know what you're insuring and know what you're not insuring. There's a koan that I've mentioned before, where a student comes to Master Dongshan and asks, I'll sort of simplify it, what do I do when I'm troubled by cold? Or what do I do when I'm troubled by heat? How can I go to some place where I won't be troubled by cold? I won't be troubled by heat. His response: when cold, kill yourself with cold. When hot, kill yourself with heat. When hot, be hot. When cold, be cold. Of course, I'm simplifying, but it's a fundamental point. We look for all sorts of insurance and protections and escapes. No problem with insurance. Nevertheless, despite our insurance, we die. Yet not born, not destroyed. What is that? Despite our insurance of figuring all sorts of things out, and I'll remember this and I'll remember that, we forget. Sometimes just a little forget, sometimes a lot forget. Sometimes we have someone who we say, oh, this person's my friend, and then they say something that we don't agree with, or that we even feel offended by. I hate them, I'm going to kill them, etc., etc. because in the midst of this life of ongoing changes is our opportunity to be this, not to see this as a threat, not to live as if it's a threat to who we are. Because if, to paraphrase Dogen, if we carry the self forward in the midst of ongoing change, we're guaranteed to have disappointment. We're guaranteed to have difficulties. If we allow, if we are awakened by the myriad ongoing changes, then we can truly be this awakened life we are. That's enlightenment. That's this nirvana in the midst of samsara. Samsara meaning ongoing change which can't satisfy.
I remember when Karen and I got married, one of the things we said was we're going to create a safe space for each other. Wow. it was just often seemed like just the opposite.
Well, if you can be in the space that you are, then you can be safe in the midst of the change. If you want safety to be that such and such doesn't happen, and no one says this, and no one does this, otherwise I am going to be threatened by it, then, and this is the difficulty to have. We have people, someone says something, and I say, that's an unsafe space for me.
Well, it's usually not just anybody, right? It's usually, in this case, you know, this idea that my wife isn't going to say things, mean things.
Well, she won't even say things that I don't always agree with or that I don't want to hear from her. Or she won't do... Sometimes it might be that your wife won't put the dishes away in the way that you don't want her to.
Yeah.
Or she won't want you to put them away in the way...
Yeah, more like that.
But that's, it's just continuation. Of course, there's degrees and we're reasonable people, aren't we? There's degrees of what we will become upset about and what we won't. But then sometimes all of a sudden we discover we're not reasonable. Reasonable mean in the sense that we create suffering where there's no need for it. If we can look at it. If you go outside in Illinois and you demand that your tree be green, a deciduous tree be green all year round in the midst of Illinois winters, you're going to be very upset. But if in the summer it could be green and in the fall it could be changing colors and then lose the leaves and in the winter it looks dead and in the spring there's tiny buds, then fine. No problems. And then at some point, oh, it died because of the heavy freeze we had in the year. Okay. That's this ongoing change of unborn, undying that we are. If we don't just see one characteristic, so one set of characteristics, but instead we see the whole universe that is manifested in this tree, in this person, in this life, in this moment, not see but be, then we can live who and what we are. We can be in the midst of ongoing change, this wisdom, compassion. Or we could create difficulties. Create difficulties in the midst of the safe space that yesterday you wanted safe this way and today she wants safe that way. Gikai.
You often say what's true for you. I mentioned a couple of things that I talk about because I really am afraid of. I'm afraid that there's a lot of people with guns who think they're toys and leave them loaded sitting around, or crazy people mm-hmm. doing it. And I'm really afraid I or someone I love will be shot senselessly mm-hmm. dead. Or I'm also very afraid that there'll be a nuclear reactor, or they're poisoning our water, and they'll make me or someone I love sick, which happened to my brother Bob when he got cancer and died last year.
Mm-hmm.
So,
let me stop you there for a second. Mm-hmm. And we could go on to say those people with guns will say, I'm afraid that my neighbors are going to come and try to beat up my family, or my government's going to come and try to do this and that to me. And then someone else will say, see, I mean, if we follow that logic, living out of our fears, then we end up having everyone trying to protect their self in their way. And what you end up having is lots of, you know, porcupines trying to have something to do with each other, but they're all sticking out all their ways of protecting each other. And it's kind of hard to even be neighbors. So you're right. There's all sorts of things that we do from the moment we're born to the moment we die and all the times in between. Some of them are skillful, some of them are not. What your life has to be is to see where your fears are appropriate, where the house is on fire right now and you have to run out and your alarm is going off, or where you're running out and screaming at about your house on fire and your neighbor's house on fire, like I said, three times or five times a week, and there's no fire. That's the point of the start, let us say, of practice, is to start seeing what's accurate and what's not accurate. What attachments or beliefs or fears are accurate right now in this life, in this moment, or where am I misconstruing?
Something that happened about being afraid of guns.
Afraid of what?
Guns.
Okay.
I live right on the edge of Springfield, and it's kind of country. So it's not uncommon at all the time to hear gunfire. And sometimes I've been out on my bike and I see people shooting. They think they're just shooting into the woods. Hopefully there's nobody on the other side of those woods, which does happen. But the other day, a couple of weeks ago, at 2 in the morning, I was all alone at home, and I heard gunshots.
Mm-hmm.
And I couldn't help but think, how do I know if somebody's, like, committing a violent crime? And they're just, you know, when do you become afraid? I mean, if it's through the daytime and it's a bunch of, you know, country people who like to shoot guns and they think they live out in the woods, I'm not really afraid. But at 2 in the morning you hear a gunshot and you're like, should I be afraid? Should I do something?
Is there something to do? What? I live in Richmond, California. Middle of the night I sometimes hear guns. If I hear them close by, I will call the police. If I hear them far, I just know they're part of the gun violence in certain areas of the city that I live in. And sometimes I hear sirens afterward and sometimes I don't. And guns is one thing, knives is another, bows and arrows, swords, all sorts of things that people do and people have done, and animals do in this delusions that we live. Delusions are inexhaustible. Nevertheless, our practice is, our vow is to put an end to them. How do we do it skillfully? Desires are inexhaustible. That's what creates delusions. That's what perpetuates delusions. That's part of the package of being human, is this self-centeredness, is part of this package that comes when we have this opportunity of being human. So there is appropriate protection and there's inappropriate protection. There's ways that work skillfully, and there's ways that create more suffering. That's why we talk about skillful and appropriate practice. So, I don't have a formula for you, but certainly if you spend every night thinking about what if someone's going to shoot a gun or hearing a gunshot in the distance, especially if it's during hunting seasons. Yeah. What's skillful for you to do? What's skillful for you to do when people say nasty things to you? Or when people say things that you think mean they don't like you? Because if we allow our mind to run away with us, then what we do creates more suffering and sometimes harm, both for us and for those who we, quote, do things to, close quote. So, that's why we talk about delusions. If you're in your bedroom and you hear distant gunshots and you're up and quaking for the next hour,
it wasn't distant. It was very proximal to my house.
Oh, well. What, do you have a phone?
But then...
What?
I mean, I could call the police and say, it sounds like gunshots a couple of houses over, but then...
Then what?
You know, I just don't know that... You know, as it is, I just kind of walked around, looked out the windows a little, and I said, it's your imagination, it's probably nothing. And if it is something, well, there's nothing you can do, really.
Well, you can call the police if it's accurate and nearby. I looked outside, I saw a little fire by next to a car across the street. I called the police. I called the fire department, and they came. By the time they came, the car was on fire, but they put it out, and all okay. No one could die. I knew the neighbors whose car it was, and he didn't know what happened. It was a wreck anyway, but it spontaneously, and they took care of it. It was gigantic fire, but no one else was hurt. No other cars went up. Nothing else was damaged. That's why we organize these sorts of things. No problem. We're not. Practice isn't talking about being stupid, but at the same time, the point is to see where we misconstrue reality. Because you don't need to pick these extreme examples. Pick the more immediate examples of people in your day-to-day life where you're believing terrible, terrifying things based on what someone says or doesn't say, do or doesn't do. That's where our immediate practice is. Because we can see, if we're honest with ourselves, where we misconstrue based on our belief of separate, fixed, permanent self, that when they do something, it's all about them not doing it the way I want them to. Or how come they're doing it today? Yesterday I was sure they were going to do something else. they're not doing it the way I want, inherently unsatisfying. They're not saying it when I want, or they're saying it before I want, or not in the way that I want. See, we don't have to pick more extreme examples. Yes, there might be an earthquake tomorrow in where I live. Guaranteed, at some point there will be an earthquake, except I'm not sure if it's going to be tomorrow or in 500 years. Everyone knows that Yosemite will blow up in, you know, maybe in 100 years, maybe in 500 years, and it'll take much of the center of the United States.
In
a
Yellowstone.
I'm sorry, I said Yosemite. You're right. Yellowstone will blow up. It's a super volcano ready to blow up, but could be in tomorrow, could be in 500 years, or it could be in 2,000 years. But if we live in the fears of about that, then we aren't right where we are. See, it's seeing what there is to do now. But more importantly is not, don't worry about those big things. I think we need to see directly for ourselves where our immediate practice and activity feeds this sort of thing for us and others. We have to first take care of our activities of creating, perpetuating delusions, self-centeredness, fears. Not in term talk about others. Practice first has to be our practice. So where do we speak words based on attachment, based on delusion that I'm going to protect myself by saying these things to this person, or I can't allow that person to, having said that to me, I've got to get back in their face right now. See, that's the point. It's very easy to think about broader things, because then we don't have to face the immediate practice of opening ourselves to letting go of the attachments, letting go of the delusions. That's where our practice. We can see it even if you sit quietly on the cushion. You could get caught up in protecting yourselves, even just in thoughts and feelings, and those of course just generate more. See, it all generates more. What we think and hold to generates more. What we do or don't do generates more of this, call it self-centered delusion, call it whatever other way we wish to speak of it. So that's where our practice is. Not to talk about the practice of others. That's secondary. There's a time and a place for that. But first we take care of our, then we can talk about, or to quote or misquote a Christian statement, first take care of the beam in your eye and then you can take care of the speck of dust in someone else's eye. We don't have to, I mean, I shouldn't be speaking of this, but since it's my responsibility, I do. So you have to hear me talk about this for you. Otherwise, you don't need such things. Just sit resolutely. See? That's what I spoke about. Be non-thinking. Be non-thinking. Let non-thinking manifest your life. Then no problems. Then the sun, moon, stars, mountains and rivers will be the tongue and the voice of the Buddha for you, which they always are for you, though you don't hear and see it. Let me stop.
I'm not really sure what my question is. except that the just the language that you use today about protecting,
mm-hmm.
how we don't like feeling unprotected. Is helpful to me. My mom died about 3 weeks ago. That's her picture on the altar. And she had started losing her memory and some of her mental functioning, and so my two sisters and I had a big meeting back in October to talk about, you know, what we're going to do about Mom. And one of the things that one of my sisters really felt like she needed to go live someplace else, but my mother clearly did not want that. But one of the things I told my sister was that, to me, sort of the bottom line in terms of deciding when something else needed to be done was, is Mom safe? And, you know, I had a particular idea in mind of what safe looked like and what not unsafe look like, and she died very unexpectedly at home by herself, at a time that, you know, if you had asked me, I would have said, yeah, Mom's pretty safe right now. And just the I don't know. I mean, it's just so. I mean, in a way, it's just very simple that something just so unexpected happened, and the idea that I've had for a long time that, you know, if I did the right things and made the right decisions, that somehow, you know, we would be able to keep her safe. Like, it's up to us somehow. I remember my daughter Anne Marie telling me about a year ago, you need to have your cell phone with you at all times, Mom, because sometimes Graham might need you and you need to be there to take that call. And I said, you know, I'm not always going to be there. I know that. And she didn't call this time. And so, well, I don't know. I'm sort of rambling here. Again, I'm not sure what my question is, but the choice of words about safe, mm-hmm. or unsafe or protected or unprotected.
Or expected or unexpected.
Yes. Yeah, we've told ourselves this story that, well, this is harder because we didn't expect it. It's such a story. It's just such a story. So.
One of my teachers made a comment about, I hardly see anyone's face who is living today. I could die.
Say it again.
I hardly see anyone who's on their face. You could see that they're living today. I could die.
Yeah.
That's about this expected and unexpected.
Yeah.
Practices today, right now, I could die.
Yeah.
Because that's what impermanence is. Except we want to spin some protective ideas. Now, that doesn't mean that there's any problem with going to the doctor, getting, you know, doing all sorts of things that medical technology and science keeps on giving us more and more opportunities. And we're living longer in statistical terms, etc. But it's all in the midst of today I could die. And in the midst of unborn, undying that we are right now. See? Then, when hot, kill yourself with heat. When cold, kill yourself with cold. See? Otherwise, we're guaranteed suffering because we want permanence of ongoing change, and we want self of non-self, and we want satisfaction from what inherently can't satisfy desires and self-centeredness. If we can be satisfied with what we have, satisfied as this life moment that is, then we can have satisfaction every moment. But not if we look it from it, for it from conditions that are ongoing change, that are inherently unable to take care of that self-centered attachment.
So I've been hearing you speak about taking right action. If the house is on fire, get out. If you hear the gunshots and they're close by, call the police. Address the moment for the right kinds of protection. And I work for peace and justice in our community. And sometimes we have to rally and be riotous. The Trump rally yesterday, I admire the people who came in and shut down the crowds that he's been drawing that beat people up and are very discriminatory. And I'm just wondering, from a practicing point of view, anger feels right to me, and it can step over the line inside myself very easily if I don't pull it back and feel angry about the rise of fascism in our country or the poisoning of our own aquifer here. And I'm curious, I'd like to hear you speak about right action and anger and protection.
I would say something very different than what you said. I would say that the rise of both Bernie Sanders and Donald Trump reflect large parts of the population feeling unprotected from the government and from circumstances and from the elites that make rules that they apply to others but not to themselves, whether the media or the political elites or the economic elites, and that both of those who are rallying to Trump and those that are rallying to Bernie Sanders, even though those two are very different, both of them reflect politically, now this is a different kind of statement, but politically they reflect the sentiments of people who feel unprotected in midst of changes, but in midst of changes that they blame on the government, blame on the media and on the rich and on the corporate interests.
and on the private citizens in terms of the Trump rally.
No. No. I don't. From what I saw about that rally, and I only saw a little, it was the protesters who disrupted it. But I don't want to get into that. I want to say both of them feel unprotected. Now, whether that's accurate or not isn't what I want to speak to. Whether it's a skillful or not isn't the point. The point is that they feel that there's populations that are protected, such as the rich, such as those who send their children to the elite schools, etc., or the corporate, and or the whatever you call about the insiders, whoever that is, and that they are unprotected in the winds of the change of the society and of the forces that are taking jobs or whatever. And that's both of those political movements are reflective of those, if you ask. Now, more than that, this isn't the place to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
But it's very much that both of those reflect that kind of fear on a political realm. Now, I didn't really care to bring this up, but since you do, I will say that much in terms of protected and unprotected. Whereas the rich, the corporate elite, the political elite, the media elite, whatever you want to call them, are protected and therefore feel no problems about making rules that others need to live by, do things that others need to have the consequences of, even if it means others lose their jobs, lose their houses, lose this or lose that. And that's what you've got going on here. But I don't really want to go into this. I won't go into this.
I'm asking a political question. The heart of my question is, when does right action include anger at an injustice that you see being perpetuated, whether it's chemical dump in your backyard or poisoning of the water that is coming out of your faucet, or, the right action in that moment is a lot more than calling the water company, because the reason the water is being poisoned is way further down the line, and we have to change it through other means, and there's people gathering to make those changes. And so I guess I'm looking around to see, is anger a force for change? Can that be a righteous peace? Can that be, is it how the individual holds that in their heart?
Is it skillful?
Yes.
I don't know. Is it? I'm asking you. Is it skillful? That's the question to ask yourself. Well, if you think so, fine.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it also leads to all sorts of self and other blaming and want and demonizing all sorts of others. So, and it's the rare person who can not have upset of the immediate moment bleed into upset throughout the rest of their life. Anger bleed into anger throughout their life, blinding them in all sorts of ways. So anger arises, but if we hold on to it more than a moment, then we poison ourselves with it.
So if I could pursue this a little bit, I'm wondering from you, how would you guide us in making the changes to protect our environment?
No, I'm not going to go there. I'm sorry.
Okay.
Because it's a much broader discussion of all sorts of things, and it's really not for here.
Okay.
And now.
Okay.
There's plenty of times to do it, but not here now.
Mm-hmm. I was listening to something on the radio about some neuroscientist guy looking at
a bunch of the triggers for anger. So, you know, mama bear, that kind of triggered my family's danger, or the environment, or, you know, my personal environment, or I was insulted. We had this list of like 9 or 10 of these, just automatically, boom.
That's right.
And, you know, anger comes up, and then I guess, on the other hand, you know, I can see how that, it's often a good idea to let go of that before you whack somebody on the head. But it seems like sometimes the energy that comes from that anger is very useful. And can you address how you can act skillfully with that, even if you're not blaming or angry, but there's still that, okay, something really does need to get done. And I lived with someone who's very depressed for a long time, and sometimes being angry would get him out of being depressed, and it was actually a useful kind of thing. But I'm not sure I'm saying this right. I guess the question is, how can you be with anger in a way that lets you harness that energy without getting caught in the blaming and the destructiveness? Is there a way to do that that's not that's skillful?
Let's start a little further back. In a sense, anger grows out of the ongoing self-centeredness justifications. It's a product, a habit, greed, anger, and ignorance, in a sense, are basic motivational poisons that grow out of being human and being self-centered. So we sort of develop these capacities. It's just one way of talking about what humans manifest as their human life. Greed, anger, and delusion, or delusion meaning living a dualistic life of self and other. So that's sort of the motivational factors that we walk around with, you could almost say. But you don't have to believe me. You just simply look at your life and notice how those come out in response or reaction to all sorts of events. Is it true? Do they come out? Then you know they're there. So in a sense, they're a product of, you know, ongoing cause and effect. It's like you're keeping on feeding and winding the engine in a certain way. So at the point when an insult, as you said, there, all of a sudden the engine shoots out the anger. Sometimes it shoots it out so-called internally, and you have the capacity to not then spew it out further, but to take that energy that's been spewed out and see how to, in a sense, experience it and see what's appropriate and skillful now. And sometimes we don't have that wherewithal to wait a moment, to contain it for a moment in order to make use of it. Instead, it overwhelms us and comes out in ways that are both harmful to us and harmful to others. You know, that anger comes out towards the wrong person, and you say something and they punch you in the face or whatever, because you don't have the capacity to pick an extreme example, to see that they're a foot bigger than you and much stronger, and, you know, just because they said something and you took that as an insult, whether it even is an insult or not, they might not even know that you exist. They might have just said something and you might have taken it as a personal insult. Or they might happen to be your boss and they said something and they, oh well, you know, not now with that question at a meeting, and you say, you can't say that to me. Well, you might lose your job because of that. Or you might, your next job evaluation might be, this person has a short temper and isn't appropriate for these sorts of positions, a danger to students, etc. So, in a sense, anger and greed and delusion are good reminders if we can be present. See, that's in part, when you sit, you get to notice that. If you don't, then you're not. Then there's something wrong with your sitting. If those don't arise in your sitting, in little bits, then you're not present in a way. But in your practice life, whether in formal sitting or in other times, those might arise, just might happen to arise. And if we develop the capacity to notice that, then we develop the capacity to experience and be present and then see what is, if anything, appropriate and skillful. Because that energy is a life energy of ours. It's, you know, it's a wind-up of the forces that is our life. And yet, it spews out. And our choice is, in a sense, to transform those into compassion and wisdom, if I say it that way. But it's up to us to make that transformation of that motivational greed and anger. Because otherwise we live out of that. And then we do all sorts of things. And most of us, or some of us, have noticed that we later actually can look back and regret those things we said out of that spurt of anger or greed because we weren't present. Or did out of that. So does that?
I think so. I think what I'm hearing is that this energy, with enough beingness, can transform.
Yeah.
I don't think the energy is going to necessarily just vanish.
No.
Maybe it can be used, held differently.
It can be transformed or revealed as a generating, nurturing energy. It's not the anger, but it's the energy that's there. That if we're not caught in our, I'll say, dualistic delusion or self-centered delusion, can reveal our life opportunity of the moment. And I think at least for some of us, I won't say everyone because I don't know what happens with everyone, but for some of us, anger can arise even as we're sitting still. Fear, greed can arise even as we're sitting still, upright, and no one is saying or doing anything to us. And if we can discover that, then we can also see that sitting allows us to transform it in the moment of sitting and experiencing it. See, that's what the opportunity of being this moment is. Of, if I say, killing ourselves with arising anger. Oh, I've gone way over time. One last, I have to ask a question, and then I'll stop. Yes, Faye.
I don't have to ask, it's okay.
You could ask, since we started already.
Okay. First I want to thank Cindy for sharing that information. I appreciate that. Sorry for your loss. I also am sitting here, the last sitting period that we had before lunch, and then even during lunch, et cetera, I was really agitated. I noticed a great deal of agitation. And I'm very encouraged by what you said about noticing greed, anger, and ignorance, or whatever, because that's great to know. That's a good thing. Because it was certainly there, present. But what I always come back to is, you know, okay, how do I, when I'm noticing that, and I can even see, okay, let it go. You know, let it go. But I wonder if it's even just being in that spin is almost a little protective or something. Mm-hmm. But you know, but it doesn't matter what it is. It's just the opportunity to really allow that to just, you know, to be with that without getting, like you said, thinking, non-thinking, or the resolute sitting. I mean, that's the one thing that I would love to be able to strengthen further, is the ability to do that.
And do it, and then it strengthens you in a way. We sometimes say zazen, zazen, zazen.
In other words, sitting sits sitting. It's not that we sit sitting. It's that by being sitting, we allow our sitting to sit us. We allow our life to live us. See, otherwise, we still have this idea that I, subject, am living this such called object called my life, or I, subject, am doing this thing called Zazen, or I, etc. But really, it's about allowing this life to sit us, allowing this universe to sit us. That's what Dogen was saying yesterday. See, then the rivers and mountains sit us. The life that we are of the universe and the stars and the moon sits us. See? Then we don't have to figure out how to do the next thing. And the stars and the moons even includes the anger arising when it arises and passes, and the cold arising, passing when that does, and the fear arising, passing when that does. Then the fear is not the fear the way we think of it in the dualistic sense. It's not the poison that we think will destroy me, self, separate, etc., etc. So, you know, when agitated, kill yourself with agitation, to paraphrase Dongshan. But, like,
I'm a little itsy bitsy.
Go.
I was watching you, Faye, and Jeff. I've never been this close to the servers. And there was a moment I thought, oh my gosh, they're going to bump rear ends. You know, because the space was really tight. And you were so aware in the way you shifted. I thought, oh, that's really beautiful. It was really quite dangerous at first.
Thank you.
What happened?
Good. I'm glad. Thank you all.